This is Lynn Salisbury with Superior Reads, a place for readers and writers of all ages to keep up to date on the local and national book scene. Today we're talking with author Shannon Givney. She is the author of the young adult novel See No Color, which was drawn from her life as a transracial adoptee, which also won the Minnesota Book Award. And today we're going to be talking to her about her newer novel, Dream Country, which recently won the Minnesota Book Award as well. Welcome to the show, Shannon.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, I have to tell you that I enjoyed the story behind the story as much as I did the book. So I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about the book, which has been described as an ambitious, epic, remarkable achievement about an intergenerational story crossing, I think, four or five generations of family. And then tell us about what piqued your interest about writing about this particular topic.
So, Dream Country, as you said, I mean, it's a great description. It's about a Liberian and Liberian-American family. So it's definitely an immigrant story. It's a Minnesota story. It is set in a suburb of Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, and it's set in has a contemporary timeline. There's a 2008 timeline. There's a 2018 timeline. And then it also is set in Liberia and also goes back in time to 19th century colonial Liberia, to the founding of that country. It also goes back in time to 1936. You can see why it took me 10 years to write it.
Right.
And so it's really looking at a lot of different themes, but definitely colonialism, slavery, intergenerational trauma. I always say it's just a light beach read, ha ha ha. And this book, I also talk about how it changed every aspect of my personal and my professional creative life. This is about 20 years ago. I just graduated from college, and I was on this fellowship to West Africa looking for stories that investigated this question of the relationship between Africans and African Americans, which is something I've been interested in for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was in 97, 98, and that was in the middle of this protracted civil war in Liberia, a neighboring country to Ghana, which was where I was. And in that conflict, which was like this disastrous 12-year conflict, 200 to 250,000 people were killed. And Liberia is a tiny country,
mm-hmm.
about 4 million people. So it was a huge, huge casualty. Nobody was untouched by this. So at that time, there were refugee camps in Ghana and other neighboring West African countries. And so I stumbled upon this Liberian refugee camp when I was there. And I walked onto the camp and I saw this flag in the center. And it, to me, looked like the American flag. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you or your listeners are familiar with the Liberian flag, but it looks just like the American flag, but there's one star instead of many. And so I asked my new friends, I was like, you know, why do you have the American flag in the center of your camp? And they were like, yeah, no, that's our flag.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Liberian flag. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, don't you know your history? Don't you know that Liberia was founded by African Americans in the 19th century? And I just could not believe. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't, mm-hmm. believe that was true. I couldn't believe that I'd never heard about this before, right?
Yeah, right.
Being African American myself,
mm-hmm.
and having searched out any and all of these histories of these encounters, never come across anything that I'd seen or heard. And so I was in the refugee camp for about 2 weeks, kind of interviewing people and observing stuff. And when I eventually, you know, I finished up my fellowship a month later and I came back to the States, and I was kind of obsessed with this whole question of African American colonization of Liberia. And so I really searched out any and all information and literature I could find. There wasn't a lot at that time. Slowly there sort of came to be a trickle in of books, mostly nonfiction. And then later I moved to the Twin Cities, where of course we have a very vibrant Liberian community here. And sort of 10 years after that initial trip, I really did not want to write the book because I knew that it was going to be this huge, epic, you know, undertaking. And I knew it was going to be very difficult. And not being Liberian, too, mm-hmm. you know, there's all these questions about representation and the politics of it. Who was I to, you know, write in a Liberian? I knew that a lot of the characters in it would be Liberian. I knew that it would have to be set in Liberia. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, if there's this really not great history of Western writers, I mean, most of them being white, yes, but still, Western writers writing about Africa in these really problematic ways, right? And very sort of like appropriative and misrepresentational and all these things. So I just didn't want to contribute to that. Yeah. And so finally, I was like, okay, the story is not letting me go. I have to commit to this. So I bought a ticket and I had some contacts that I had made throughout some local librarian communities here. And I went to Liberia. I went to Monrovia and I actually.
What year is this?
What's that?
What year was that you went back?
That was, okay, so that's 2000. I want to say it was 2007.
Oh, okay.
I want to say it was 2007.
We're talking with author Shannon Gibney.
So then I actually met my now former husband. We were married for about 8 years. We mm-hmm. have two beautiful children. And he was my research assistant that was there. And so he helped me make contacts, figure out what questions to ask, how to approach people in a culturally appropriate way, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, when I was done with that research trip, I went back home and we obviously kept in touch, talked every day on the phone. And then it took about 2 years to get him here, but I got him here. So the book just, wow. You start off with one set of questions and then those questions sometimes, again, just completely change every part of your life. That's what happened with the book, actually.
Right. I was fascinated right before while I was reading the book, I think I heard a news story about parents in London who were sending their Somali kids back because they were getting knifed, and they thought for their safety to protect them, they would send them back to their country. And I was sort of horrified about it. And then I read Coley's story, and it's heartbreaking. Tell us a little bit about Coley and what happened with him.
Yeah, so Coley is this teenager. He's Liberian. He's a child of war. He has undiagnosed PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And he and his parents fled during the war, and then they were in this refugee camp, the very refugee camp, of course, I visited all those years ago outside of Accra, Ghana. And then they came to the United States when he was about 11. And so he's been in country in the United States for about 6 years. And this is, again, 2008, Brooklyn Center High School. The high school is mostly populated with African-American and African immigrant students. And then, like most schools in Minnesota, it's mostly a white teaching staff and white administrators. And the African immigrant students and the African American students are just like constantly at each other's throats. Mm-hmm. Like they just don't get each other. They don't like each other, all these things. Mm-hmm. And Coley is sort of at the center of this. Like, I mean, he's kind of effectively being bullied by some of the African American kids, one kid in particular. And, you know, he has his small sort of crew of friends, these other African immigrant boys, but he just doesn't see himself really reflected anywhere in the school community. He feels mm-hmm. like his parents, you know, his parents are just kind of like struggling to make it and work every day. His younger sister is like this, you know, superstar mm-hmm. academic. And, you know, there's this one line, I think, where he says, you know, maybe she had left Liberia before it had started to mean something to her. Uh-huh. She just doesn't have all this baggage that he does. And so he just keeps on getting into fights with mm-hmm. these African-American kids. And finally, he beats up this kid who's been bullying him for a while. He beats him up so bad, he puts him in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So he gets expelled for that. And then he starts selling weed on the side with this guy in the neighborhood. And his parents are just, they're actually terrified for him. Mm-hmm. They don't understand the American school system. What they do understand is that they have this black male child in this school system and in this society that hates young black males, and they're really scared for his life, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, the only thing that they know to do to them, it's really an act of love, is to send him, quote unquote, back to Liberia, where they have, you know, some family there who could take care of him, and then he'll effectively kind of be sent to reform school. So, you know, it's sort of like that, what is that, scared straight kind of mentality, right? Where it's like you're being sent back to this place where it's just like so different from the material and like resource abundance, I guess you would say, that we have here in the United States, that it's just sort of like, you know, the idea is just that they're not going to be able to get into any more trouble there. And that's where the Coley section ends. His parents kind of effectively tricking him to get on this plane to Monrovia. Yeah.
It's devastating. We're speaking with author Shannon Gibney about her book, Dream Country. So we go on from there to another story of Yasmin. And one of the things that I was horrified to learn was about the American Colonization Society. And so let's talk a little bit about that. Can you enlighten our readers about the society?
Yeah.
And it was a real thing, right?
Yes. I mean, this is the thing, is that, you know, the ACS, as it was commonly known, American Colonization Society, I mean, it was not a fringe organization. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what's really, really shocking about it. I mean, this was an organization that had, you know, former presidents, James Monroe was a member. It had federal monies allocated to it. It had state monies allocated to it. Basically, this was an organization of white male elites, many of whom were slave owners, many of whom were business owners, politicians, etc. And it was founded in the early 19th century. And these white men, these elite white men, were really worried about the so-called scourge, you know, growing quote-unquote problem of the free black population in the colonies at that time. They
mm-hmm.
did not like this. They did not like what this could and would mean for their slaves. And so they were like, you know, what can we do about this quote-unquote problem? Let's establish a colony, quote-unquote, in Africa, and that will take care of this problem. So that was the sort of like the mission of the ACS,
mm-hmm.
of the American Colonization Society. And so in this section, you know, we don't necessarily know so at the time, but, you know, Yasmin would be Coley, the character that we were just talking about, the young man in 2008, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. His great, 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 you know, way down
mm-hmm.
the line,
right.
grandmother. And so Yasmin is this African-American woman. She's not a slave. She actually works on a Quaker plantation outside of Norfolk, Virginia. But, you know, the conditions are not good. She is a widower. And she's got four children ranging in age from just a baby, like one, to I believe Big George is 17, 18. And so she, you know, she takes a look around. This is like 1826, colonial Virginia. And she's just like, you know, this country likes to talk about how it's all about freedom and democracy for all. But, you know, for black folks, for my children, for black women, I'm not seeing it. So her master is her Quaker master is part of the American Colonization Society. And so he's hosting a meeting. And so she hears about this colonization scheme to Liberia. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to take my chances. I think that actually me and my kids probably have a better chance in Liberia of being free and actualized than we do here. And so that's what she does. And they go to Liberia. And it is a pretty devastating sort of story arc. This story arc, I think, it's been interesting since the book was published in September. So it's really interesting, I think, to talk to folks about the reactions to the entire book. But what's interesting to me, I would say, is that the Yasmin section is the section that the most people really wrestle with and really sort of share with me, that it is really difficult to process this journey of Yasmin, because, I mean, you're rooting for her. I mean, she's really this, in the beginning, here's this single mother, this African-American woman, you know, who's got this whole group of kids that she's just trying to keep alive and make a way for in this culture that just there's no way for them, right? And then, you know, she ends up, by all intents and purposes, like being a success in, I mean, a really great success by, you know, the end of the that section, right? Like 18 years on in the Liberian colony, she's just like one of the most successful people there. But it's come at great cost to her family. It's come at great cost to her, I would say, morally, ethically, et cetera. So, yeah, people really wrestle with that.
Yeah, I thought it was a tough section, and I cried a couple of times. It was just a really emotional story, part of the story. I was also just going back to that American Colonization Society. In your notes in the back of the book, the author notes, and I just want to encourage everybody to read those because they are so important to understanding the whole story. But just that James Monroe was part of that, yes. And Monrovia was named
Monrovia
after him?
Monrovia was named after him, yes, yes. I mean, even like one of there's two quotes in the front of the book, right? And one of them is from Thomas Jefferson, right? And the quote is basically like, "Let an ocean divide the white man and the man of color," right? I mean, so this idea that somehow the founding fathers were not racist, right?
That, right.
And vehemently so, like, I mean, vociferously so, many of them, right? And actually held slaves themselves, many of them, right? And had these really deeply problematic, you know, disturbing ideas about Black folk and freedom and bondage and self-actualization, and that these are actually foundational to the American psyche, right? And just the union itself. And I think the book also, when we see what happens, right, when folks like Yasmin, you know, take some of those ideas unwittingly in a lot of ways and put them in this other settler colonial context, right? I mean, it can be across the ocean, right, in a different place, but it's still problematic, right?
And where where the oppressed becomes then the oppressor.
Yes.
I mean, that was a hard part of that story, too.
Yes, yeah. That's what really bothers people about that section. And it should. I think it should bother all of us. I mean, that to me was one of the reasons why I wanted to write the story. I'm sorry, I'm outside and there's a emergency vehicle going by. almost out of the way. But, you know, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book, because it really disturbed me once I really started digging into this history. It's like, how do people who really should have known better didn't? Like, it just seemed to me that they didn't know better, right? Because they just, in many ways, reproduced many of the horrific oppressions that they were fleeing. And so I always talk about how, you know, especially with this book, it being historical fiction, I've gotten asked by a lot of readers, a lot of audiences, you know, do you feel like really what you've written here is a social history? And my answer is always no, because I feel like, as an author, as a writer, I really, my top priority is getting at some kind of emotional truth rather than historical fact or historical. So I really wanted to investigate what would really motivate these characters to make these kinds of choices. Those were the driving questions for me.
Yeah. We're talking with author Shannon Gibney about her new book, Dream Country. So essentially, it took you 10 years to write, but it took you 20 years to sort of process all this. And you talk about that in your author notes, a little bit about how you didn't feel like, you know, the story of, you know, the struggle of appropriating somebody else's story, but also not sure that you were ready to write it as an author. But you do it just masterfully. I mean, it was just, it's quite an amazing book, the way you cross continents and time, and I never was lost. The family trees help, by the way. Did you have a favorite character?
Oh my gosh. It's hard for me, right? Because you get so close to all of these characters when you really spend so much time with them and go through so much with them. So I have this really soft spot in my heart for all of them. I mean, I think definitely when people read the book, definitely, especially people who know me, the character that most people are like, okay, that's most likely this angel at the end. And that angel is Coley's sister at the end. of the book, who is a writer. And, you know, she lives in Powderhorn Park in South Minneapolis, which is where I live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a writer. I'm a writer. She's a very sensitive person. I'm a very sensitive person. I mean, there's like a lot of overlap there. You know, she's somebody too who, in a very different way than me, but also in like very different in terms of like the particulars of her story are different than mine. But I just think like the essence of the questions we're asking are similar, but we're both sort of trying to make sense of histories, personal and kind of like national histories that have all these holes in them,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so then the question is, what do you do with that? You know? And I think both of us have turned to writing as a way to try and fill in emotionally, right? Like a lot of those spaces. Yeah. But Yasmin, I mean, I definitely, like, at the end of that section, Yasmin is really a character that's hard to like But at the same time, like, I really feel for her. Like, I feel, even at the end, I feel like because she's become very hard and bitter, but I understand it, you know? Well, I mean, and I hope readers understand it too.
Yeah,
you know?
She has those moments when they first arrive where, you know, she has that sickening feeling of, oh my God, what did I do? What have I just thrown my kids into? So she has this mother's heart that I can relate to, I'm sure you can relate to, and so many readers will, but things go... they go south very fast.
Yeah,
but
yes,
I can't imagine. I mean, they come to this country where they've been told they're going to be able to have farm and grow their food, and the ground is rock hard during the drought, and then it floods when it's during the rainy season, and they're growing things they're not familiar with. It's just a totally different life. And then you have the factions that are against the African Americans coming back to Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's a brutal story.
Yeah, no, totally. And then you have also, too, right, the American Colonization Society, which is sort of like the container for all this. So this is basically like, okay, there's no way this is not going to end in tragedy for the African and African-descended bodies that are sort of, you know, in the middle of this mess. And so that's exactly what happens in a lot of ways. Yeah, and then you have, of course, the Togar section, which, you know, comes right after the Koli section, and that section opens with Togar basically fleeing these colonial agents that are the descendants of the Americo-Liberians or the African-Americans that
mm-hmm.
colonized Liberia, right? And that is also kind of a brutal section.
That is, yes.
Yeah, so he's an indigenous man, and he just wants to, you know, farm and in his village and, you know, take care of his family. And there are these soldiers that are sort of like the agents of this ruling class. They're just, you know, going around sort of raiding the villages, taking their food, and then also just trying to steal the village men into working on their plantations,
so
their personal plantations.
Enslaving them, basically, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right. So, which is also not really a story that is really told very often.
Right.
I just stumbled upon that, you know, talking to my then uncle-in-law, you know, about it and some of the people that he knew been through that. So, and then, of course, the last section that we haven't talked about is just the, you know, we talked a little bit about the very last section, which I don't know how much to reveal about that because there are spoilers for people who haven't
read
the book, but that is...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
We don't want to wreck it, but the whole...
Yeah.
I think Evelyn and UJ, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes, yes. That's the fourth section.
Yeah, yeah. That section is, it helps you understand UJ was Coley's father and why he made the choices he made. You have a little bit more of an understanding, but you have to wait until the end of the book. So you kind of hate him until the end of the book.
Yes, yes, exactly. He's not a very sympathetic character in the Coley section. And
right.
Then you start to—he's a young man in the fourth section, and it's like right on the cusp of what he thinks is going to be the Liberian Revolution. And of course, we know from history, it's not at all. It devolves into the Liberian Civil War, and which completely, you know, devastates not only the country but him, but as well as him. And he has like this terrible personal loss too.
We're talking with author Shannon Gibney. She will be in town at Drury Lane Books on July 6th at 7 p.m. for a book signing and reading. So please do stop in and meet her and get a book. Before we close, though, I want to talk just a few minutes about your new anthology that's coming out, I believe, October 15th.
Yes, yes.
What God Is Honored Here. And tell us a little bit about what is the anthology about?
Yeah, so the anthology, as you mentioned, is called What God Is Honored Here. And then the subtitle is Writings on Miscarriage, on Infant Loss by and for Native Women and Women of Color. And so I myself suffered an infant loss. I had a stillbirth at 41 and a half weeks. And my dear friend and colleague, also a Minnesota writer, Kao Kalia Yang, also suffered a loss, I believe at 20 weeks of her son. And I believe they were about a year apart, but we knew, again, friends and colleagues, that each of us had gone through this. And we talked about it and we were like, you know, you go through something like this and it's painful, it's traumatic, it's all these things. But then there's this additional level of trauma on top of it, which is that there's nobody in the culture is talking about it. The fact that, you know, I believe, you know, one third of women will have a miscarriage at some point. And that this is something that happens to human beings and mm-hmm. to women and women of color, you know, disproportionately, and Native women as well. So mm-hmm. we decided, you know what, we want to try to ameliorate in some way the narrative gap on this. And so we're going to put out a call for submissions for women of color, Native women who would like to write about some of their experiences with this. And we just got some incredibly powerful, incredibly moving, yes, incredibly difficult pieces. And so it's been an incredible journey. And we're so proud, and the fact that it's coming out this fall.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, you know, it's an important book. I've only read a few of the stories in it so far. I'm going to be finishing it later this week, but it's a very moving, tough stuff in there, but important for everybody to be able to process that sort of thing out loud, you know, and begin the conversation about it. So
yeah, that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Shannon, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. Thanks so much for being with us on Superior Reads. Don't forget that Shannon will be at Drury Lane on July 6th at 7 p.m. and watch for her anthology, What God Is Honored Here, to come out in October. Thanks again, Shannon.
Thank you so much, Lynn.
This is Lynn Salisbury with Superior Reads, a place for readers and writers of all ages to keep up to date on the local and national book scene.